Hello, welcome to the Lightning PHP podcast. This is episode 46, yet another podcast. And this time I have a different guest host, Artur Sosins from Latvia. Hello, Artur. How are you doing?
Yeah, hello. I'm actually fine. First time we record probably in the daily time, so I'm really energetic and looking forward.
Yeah, most people will watch the recording afterwards, so probably don't have any idea what time I would be here. But I guess from the liking, they can guess that there is something different, which is the fact that today I have the sun coming from my left. And well, it's always a good day to talk about PHP. Artur, despite you've been lately the guest of the JS Classes site, this time he's filling in for Cesar Rode that could not make it this time, unfortunately, for some personal matters. I hope he can come back next month. And this month we are going to start precisely by the usual topics on which we talk about the latest releases of PHP. So on PHP 5.5 there was the 10th revision, 5.5.10, and as always it has been a release with mostly bug fixes. So PHP 5.5 is mostly in maintenance. Most things that are added are just bug fixes and minor modifications. And at the same time, there was also a couple of PHP 5.4 releases, one on April 3 already, in April, and it was 5.4.27, and the previous one was already in March, so it was about 1 month before, and also mostly the same changes, because as we're getting closer to a PHP 5.6 release. Most of the things on previous versions are basically just bug fixes. Artur, I wonder if you have been using any PHP lately. I know that you are more working more on the game development world. It's probably not so much PHP related, but what have you been using in terms of PHP, if any?
Well, honestly, yeah, I've been using a little less JavaScript than I used to, and I think even more less PHP, so I'm kind of maybe not following much of what happens, what advances. I know there are many changes, many great features coming, and ideas, and that's actually what I would be discussing it in this podcast. But what I noticed in the changelog is that actually what I thought was interesting, that 5.4 and 5.5 version have same bug fixes, so they are like handled simultaneously, as I understand. They are both fixing versions and managing as different branches. So That was something that I thought was interesting. And will the PHP 5.6 be another branch?
Yeah, well, even PHP 5.6 does not have many new features because, as we mentioned before, there are already plans for PHP 6 or whatever will be the PHP next version. And at the same time, there are lots of parallel developments outside the PHP core, like the ECK language, but we'll get back to that ahead. Now, talking about some latest developments, Well, these latest releases of PHP have some security bugs fixed, some even related with OpenSSL, but the greatest announcement of the latest weeks was the OpenSSL Heartbleed security bug that was found. Actually, it was announced recently, but I think it was introduced like 2 or 3 years ago, and only recently it was announced that there was a fix. And I bet that the CIA already knew, and probably would be taking advantage of it to exploit some sites and watch some more people that need to be watched, I guess. And but regarding the security bug fix that was announced recently on OpenSSL, I thought it would be interesting to write an article because many PHP developers were concerned if the PHP would somehow be vulnerable, or at least the web servers that use OpenSSL would be vulnerable. So I wrote this article. Basically, I tell everybody that was concerned that this security problem is only affecting sites that are using SSL. That's the basic condition. If your site does not is not running SSL, HTTPS, you should not be concerned because, well, you probably should be concerned with the data that goes back and forth and it's not encrypted, but that's not a secure internal security of your web server. And another matter, because not everybody would be affected by this bug, is that problem is only affecting releases of OpenSSL 1.0.1, and unless you already upgraded to the 1.0.1G, you should upgrade because the previous 1.0.1 releases were the ones that were affected. But if you are running 1.0.0 or maybe 0.9.8, you probably should not be concerned with this specific vulnerability. You probably should be concerned of some other past security problems or other matters related with it. So in this article, basically, I'll talk about who is affected, who is not affected. Although this vulnerability affects mostly web servers, it is possible that it may affect clients. For instance, if you have some PHP script that sends SSL requests to a web server, in theory, it is possible that it could be subject to some exploit, for instance, if the server was compromised. And maybe it could take advantage of this vulnerability if, well, for instance, making your client share private information eventually contained in private files. Well, I'm not really an expert in security. I'm just trying to interpret this how far this vulnerability can affect this well, the different setups that OpenSSL could be used. But that's what I got. First, you should exclude the fact that when you are not using SSL at all, and then you should also exclude the situations on which you are not running 1.0.1 prior to the G release. And well, in any case, there is a site called of a company called Qualys SSL Labs, and there is a SSL server test that show if different sites are vulnerable. And here they make several tests, not only to the Heartbleed security vulnerability, but eventually other security problems, like for instance the use of encryption ciphers. And well, anyway, if you are not sure if your site is vulnerable, you should go to this site and test it. And probably, if there are any issues related with Heartbleed or vulnerability or not, you should go to this site and eventually test to see what are the issues. Here is just an example of a results page, which got an F, which is a lousy grade, and it tells exactly what are the issues, and you should eventually do the same with your server. Arthur, have you tested any servers, and maybe anything related with your current work that you could be concerned about security and this vulnerability in particular?
While I actually developed lots of websites and using PHP, of course, I was never responsible for server setups, and that was actually another department usually doing that. So I actually even don't have much websites, except probably from my own private ones that I tested, that got, I think, C or something. But they usually use SSL only because of they need it for a Facebook app. You know, being for a Facebook app, you have to support HTTPS and the SSL layer. But interesting fact about the Heartbleed, I recently read an interview with a developer who introduced it. And he actually committed the code with a bug just 1 minute before midnight in New Year's Eve. It was 2011, just 1 minute before New Year. He submitted this bug, and it basically, as he explains, it was an oversight, and it's actually quite frustrating that it took, 2 years to notice it. And most probably it was exploited in this time by the ones who knew, who saw it. So
I guess a CIA detected it much, much earlier.
Yeah.
Because they have the best experts in security. Because they have to. Jokes apart, if you were concerned if your web servers were vulnerable or if you need to do anything, now, at least I hope with this article that I published, you know what to do. Basically, you can do this very quick test in the SSL Labs site, and then you can figure what to do if you do not feel capable of doing any server maintenance. Talk with whoever needs to do it, if you did not do it already. On my part, I got a lot of emails of companies saying, "Oh, our servers are secure, don't be concerned."
You still
is not your data.
You still should be concerned if you're using same passwords for different websites and if at least one of them wasn't secured. Basically, all your accounts are compromised.
Right. That's a whole different problem.
That's not a developer problem, yeah?
Yeah, well, there are so many security problems that most people never heard. Well, one typical problem that I noticed is that, for instance, on secure sites, if you have SSL2 enabled, you already have a whole problem. And other than that, even if you have only enable newer versions as SSL or TLS. You still have to be concerned about certain ciphers that you are using that are considered to be too weak and could be broken, and it's possible to have some exploits. But okay, I hope this article and our comments here are already useful enough for whoever needs to be concerned about security matters. So let's move on with the next topic, on which I'm going to just comment about an idea that appeared on the PHP internal list for eventual feature for the next PHP versions. Actually, I don't think this is going to pass. It was just an idea to have some kind of statement like there is in C language, on which you could just put an if-def command there, actually a directive, like there is in C, but you would use it in PHP code, so you would eventually enable sections of code that would run certain statements or not. And some of the people that complained just say, well, you can sort of run that code conditionally or not, checking PHP version, because that check will still be done at runtime. And well, the defense of this argument was that if newer versions introduce backwards incompatible syntax, that code would not run on older PHP versions. And with using this if-def directive, it would sort of avoid the eventual syntax problems. And I thought it was actually a pretty sensible idea. Yeah. I did not see many people accepting it, but well, that's my opinion. What do you think, Arthur?
Yeah, that is an awesome point and a valid point, and I would actually really want something like that. Well, if you are a developer who is building something from to an end client, basically you take what server he has or provide a server and build for that, and it would work. But if you are a developer who builds libraries, packages that you want to deliver to other developers, yeah, and you would want to provide the maximum compatibilities across all versions, and as you said, if syntax changed, and it probably will change in PHP 6 or whatever it will be called, then some kind of this runtime check that would not even parse the code that is incorrect, completely ignore it, would be an awesome addition and a must. I say it's a must.
Right, and that's interesting, because I was once in a while I get in the PHP classes error logs, I get some warnings about some user that submitted some code that has syntax errors, or at least apparent syntax errors that are in reality caused by the PHP functions to highlight code. That when they find a syntax problem, they throw a warning that goes in the error logs, and I see there. And but it could also be caused by code that is meant for newer PHP versions than the ones that are running on the site. And with this if-def command, probably it would that problem would be avoided. And but well, I don't know. I'm not sure if there is a final decision regarding this feature.
Well, the consequences of not implementing such feature, I think, would be that the version that would introduce the most changes, like it's possibly BPHPH, would not be so easily adapted, and it would take a long time to adapt to all the servers. And it would actually damage it more, mostly.
Yeah. And another point is that, for instance, now with the Facebook at language that we'll talk a bit more in detail ahead, they introduced new syntax constructs, which could be could generate warnings if the new syntax warnings, actually syntax parsing failures, if there is no thing like this. And the way they solved it in the hack language is that now, instead of the starting code that is not compatible with the regular PHP version, they start with a less question mark hh. And if they start with that code, the PHP regular PHP interpreter will ignore that because it thinks that it's like HTML. Probably it would output it, which is not a really good idea. So in this case, I think the if def statement would probably be a better solution. And I think that this is not just for PHP versions, it also detect the presence of PHP extensions. Well, that's what I got from this proposal. And sometimes we are trying to interpret the original proposals and maybe we are getting it wrong. But that's what I got from this idea. And talking about future PHP versions, a new page on PHP Wiki was created with the idea to talk about thoughts, ideas specifically for Zend Engine. Well, for starters, I am not so sure that Zend Engine will be the engine of PHP 6. I think if depending on Rasmus, probably introducing a JIT compiler or something more like the EPUB VM, it's something that is not for PHP 6, maybe for PHP 7. But between now and then, I'm sure there will be some intensive discussions, because I can see that the community is split. They, on one side, are those that are sort of against rushing things, introducing substantial changes, even on major versions, because the experience of the past PHP 6 failure was that they tried to change too many things at once, and it was taking too long. So now they are pushing more towards changes that they will take a smaller efforts, and they will be introduced one at a time, so to not cause so many problems as the prior PHP 6 attempt led. So here in this page, you can see some ideas. Well, even assuming that Zend Engine will be still the one that will be used in PHP 6, some of these ideas somehow we already talked about. I don't know, Artus, did you find any interesting ideas that you think to be more worth mentioning?
Well, I just skimmed through because, well, basically it's an engine related and maybe not so interested for the NPHP users. I just skimmed through, and yes, they basically they want to encourage to use some good practices, like, you know, like create a C wrapper, C++ API wrapper for some libraries so they could easily abstract them, use it in PHP, and make them more separated from each other and not integrated, so it would be more modular and easier to extend and stuff like that. And it all makes sense, yes, but given the large current code base, it might be hard to change the habits and re-implement everything. So I don't know what of that would be usable, what not.
Yeah. Well, basically, some people mentioned the eventuality of introducing the JIT compiler a JIT engine.
Yeah.
But here, what we see is basically they are want to implement a JIT engine on a Zend engine. So they are not considering in replacing the Zend engine with the EPUB compiler, which is probably the more sensible idea, because Facebook has many engineers working on it, and they certainly will maintain it. On the other hand, some people may not be so interested in relying on Facebook, but somehow we already commented about that. And other than that, I don't know if other ideas are so relevant. Probably they are interesting, but they would not introduce such a significant changes that be more important than, I think, at least in my opinion, the introduction of a JIT engine. But these are just a few ideas, and I think the debate is still starting up. There will be plenty of other discussions until they get to a decision what to do for PHP 6. And now also related with future PHP versions, there was a discussion that I thought was really relevant, because with now the different variants of the PHP engines that exist besides the official PHP Zend engine based engine, there is now EPUB VM, and there are some other solutions based on .NET and Java virtual machines. And so the proposal is that there is an effort, there will be an effort of sometime in the future to create an official specification of the PHP language, because there is none. And this makes it hard for other implementers to create a new engine that supports PHP, because the what we have in terms of specification is nothing, just mostly the PHP documentation and test suites that probably will help to test if features were well implemented, but there is nothing formal to document this. And as always, there is already an intensive debate about this matter, because some people that clearly are not interested in somehow promoting the existence of other PHP implementations, because they are probably too attached to the current official PHP version. They sort of know, if you want just a PHP specification, go and write yourself, because that's a lot of trouble. And that's the usual excuse for when people do not want to certain things to happen, they start raising artificial difficulties, and which is silly, because the PHP project has gone through so much work and development. Creating a specification, at least in my opinion, would not be such a big effort. It's probably not an amusing effort, probably boring to write one, but I'm sure there are people that kind of enjoy doing that. Why opposing to it? I don't know. What do you think, Artur?
Well, writing specification is one thing. Enforcing it would be completely another. So how to make the other developers follow the specification convention, some stuff. But if there will be a specification written for PHP, I think it might produce more PHP-like engines created for different environments and machines that would interpret and run it on the much more wide variety of devices, and it could help PHP to be even more popular in that way.
Right, but you know, it seems that some people of the PHP core are too attached to their own implementation. And the discussion is still going on, I think, and whether or not it will be a specification, that didn't stop to create new engines that run PHP code. So, I think it would be nice, but in reality, it was demonstrated to not be really, really necessary. But okay, that's just my point of view.
If someone thinks that a specification is not necessary, just let them look at JavaScript, CSS, and different browser versions, so they would understand.
Yeah, but somehow that will happen anyway. I remember that those guys of Palantir, PHP engine that would run on .NET. They before PHP supported namespaces, they already supported namespaces, and they sort of used a syntax for namespaces that was more like Java with the domains, domain names in inverted order, and separating with dots, and for some, and it worked. It didn't stop them to evolve the language. And it is even amazing that they use dots to separate the namespace components instead of backslashes. I remember there was a huge discussion about namespace separator characters, and they complained a lot about that it caused problems to use dots, but they did it, the .NET people. Actually the Palantir people. I remember that, they were interviewed here in the past, and they said that the first thing that they need to do to when they develop their own engine is that they need to create a specification for PHP, at least from their own interpretation of what different things in PHP should do. And it seems it has helped to them to probably create their tests to make sure that their engine was implemented correctly. But, I don't know, maybe I'm not interpreting the need for a PHP specification. As I mentioned before, I'm going to comment about the announcement of the ECK language that happened last month. The Facebook has been developing this for a few months, and actually, I did not notice that they were doing it, because I'm not mistaken, the repositories were public. Well, anyway, they announced it now, and basically it introduces some features that I think that are great. Some of them I probably would not be so interested in, because somehow there are means to implement them, or at least it's not something important. But the others, they perfectly make sense. In this article, I divided the types of features in terms of benefits. So there one benefit that I consider is bug prevention, features that help bug prevention. And then there are features that enable some performance optimization, and others that are more meant for somehow some code reuse. And these features, they are really interesting. If I could pick just one of the most interesting features, I'll mention mainly the asynchronous programming support, because as we comment frequently on the JavaScript JS classes hangout, asynchronous programming is always in hell, at least how it's done in JavaScript, because it requires lots of callbacks to implement things like handling with I/O operations that are necessarily asynchronous, but in the regular PHP version they are synchronous, which means that PHP waits for those operations to end before it proceeds executing any other code, and this prevents PHP to run multiple parallel asynchronous operations that could somehow provide some performance enhancement. As I already wrote in a past article about doing asynchronous programming. But the thing that I thought it was more interesting regarding the hack language implementation is that unlike JavaScript, they do not exactly implement it with the regular callbacks. They introduce some keywords, async and await. And this await statement is the one that I found more interesting because the way it works is that it takes some code as parameter, and the code in front of the code that follows the wait statement is only resumed after any asynchronous operations that run inside the code that is declared with the wait keyword have finished. And this is different from the typical callback system that calls some code, because there are situations on which the use of callbacks makes it impossible to deal with like we do with the asynchronous code. For instance, if you have some asynchronous code that is inside a for loop, you cannot break that loop from inside the callback that is invoked when the asynchronous operation is completed. And with this await keyword, it makes it possible to actually do that, taking advantage of all the features of asynchronous programming, but do it like we are using asynchronous programming. Well, I don't know. This is my favorite new feature that the hack language promotes for the reasons that I mentioned. I'll also explain it more in this article. I don't know. What about you, Artus? Do you also like this asynchronous programming feature, or do you have some other favorite features?
Well, I'd say not only that. Well, basically, first time I've heard of a hack language, I was like, oh, come on, really? Another language? Do we really need it?
Right.
But then, after reading more about it, I actually understood the whole idea behind it. So, basically, you can take your current PHP code, put it on a hack server, and it would run great. But if you need more speed, like define types, and you have a faster, more efficient memory allocation, yeah, you have some heavy tasks that run them in background using async features. And even if, as we see, as you told it yourself, there are keywords, await, async, so the design of the language is implemented that way, that we simply add those keywords, helping us use this feature of a hack language without heavily modifying our existing PHP code. So basically, hack provides sense. I hope PHP fans won't trash me for this, but hack provides a sense of scalability to PHP implementations. And that is an awesome idea, and kudos to the authors and the designers, because I think if Facebook continues with it and we can see the stable spine behind this project, that many more developers could actually adapt it.
Right. Well, the idea that I got from this, because from Autodesk to this project, it was started last year, so we only had a few months of development. It's what I'm seeing regarding this implementation is that somehow Facebook is sending a message that we can bring all the features that PHP probably needs, and we can do it very fast. We do not need to wait years in lengthy discussions, people boycotting each other's ideas, even though many people are pledging for them. And I don't know how correct developers are who react to this, because if the PHP developer does not get up to speed, I suspect that many PHP developers will simply switch to the Facebook hack language and do not look back.
I think, yeah, that could be divided as some, well, regular developers would still use the PHP normal version, but hack could be like an enterprise version that could be implemented to a more high scalable apps. And well, if it really goes, there are no major flaws, and Facebook is will be really solid behind it, then I think by 2020 we might have a hack classes podcast here.
Yeah, that could be an idea. Well, I think we're closer to that than probably having some other version of PHP classes to a different language that is not even compatible with PHP because it's different. Well, anyway, another part of the article that I presented there is that just giving an opinion about whether will hack kill PHP. Well, I give several reasons, maybe not. There, for instance, like the fact that the PHP hack code is not backwards compatible. I mean, once you switch to hack code, you cannot go back because it's not backwards compatible. And some people may still only have PHP-based environments to run their code, so they probably support the PHP because PHP code will run on hack, and hack code may not run on PHP engine. And another complaint that we hear is that HHVM, which is of the hack language, does not yet support all platforms and PHP extension. And this is actually very true, because even I tried to compile it on OpenSUSE, and I simply failed. Probably I was not having enough patience to figure all the packages that I need to have installed, because it was taking me too long, and I sort of gave up. Yeah, that's regarding the platforms. And one detail that I mentioned is that based on the statistics of users of PHP class, 77% of PHP developers use Windows on desktop. So probably they prefer to use Windows, and if there is not a version of the ECK language for Windows, even if nobody uses ECK on Windows on production, it is important for developers that prefer doing it all in Windows.
Exactly. That's the only reason I haven't even considered trying hack for now, because I'm running Windows.
Yeah. Actually, I was not thinking about you, but now that you mentioned it. So we are part of the large majority, the 77% that use PHP on Windows, even though many PHP developers like Microsoft and Windows and whatever, that's a fact. Even though PHP is mostly running on Linux in server or in production servers, or at least for development, many people prefer Windows. And if they are comfortable with using Windows, that's something that Facebook hack developers should consider if they want PHP to, I mean, the hack language to be successful. And then there is another reason that some people do not trust Facebook. They probably would be scared if Facebook did something against their will, and they would regret having migrated to the hack language. So this is more a psychological reason than a fact. It's basically a fear, but it should also be considered. On the upside, I mean, the possibility of the hack language say kill PHP. One of the reasons that could happen is that the hack language implements many, many features that PHP users want to have in the language, but for some reason the PHP core developers have turned down when they were proposed. I remember, for instance, annotations. Annotations are often used to define types of variables and functions and stuff like that. And the proposal to support annotations built in the language is always sort of rejected, and the implementations that exist are based on comments. And now with the hack language type hinting, at least most of the needs for declaring types in annotation would not be needed. So this is just an example of a feature that PHP developers, PHP users would like to have in the language, and somehow it was a feature that was proposed and turned down. Another reason is the fact that the hack language is based on HHVM, Dynamic Compilation Jet Engine, and this is great for many reasons, not just for speed, but also since the HHVM can run on a multi-threaded environment, it would make more efficient use of memory. Eventually, it would be able to make better use of server resources. Finally, I proposed somehow that if the hack language could support a PHP backwards compatible mode that is not like the one they suggested with the last question mark HH, they would use comments. And the comments allow everything, so they could use comments as hints, and this would allow the hack-enabled code to still be compatible with PHP code. Well, this is just an idea that I'm presenting. I do not recall anybody else providing this idea. So these are the reasons why I think there is a chance somehow the hack language could somehow kill the PHP version. I don't know. Do you have any other comments regarding this?
Except that your idea might save PHP community from hack invasion, that bringing backwards compatibility would be a great solution.
Yes, because I believe that it would be silly because hacking in practice is a fork of PHP, not a fork in terms of forking the code base, but the language, just the language concepts. And if the PHP community starts splitting and hack supporters and non-hack supporters, I think this may weaken the PHP community, and it wouldn't be good, I think, at least. That's the way I see it. Okay, we covered a lot about the hack language. Now moving on with another topic. This time I'd like to just comment briefly about an article that actually I wrote, but it appeared in PHP Classes blog, but it is not exactly a part of the main PHP Classes blog. This is an article related with a package that I have developed. Actually, I've been developing this package since many years ago, like since 1999, and this package is for email address validation. Well, the basic email address validation is mostly to just probably use some regular expression to see if the email address meets a certain syntax requirements. But that does not mean that the address is valid. There are many other things that can be done to test if the address is valid. So I developed this library, which I've been improving over the years to make tests that test more cases, not just the basic syntax of the email address. It can do a lot more things nowadays. And to explain that, I talk about six forms of invalid email addresses. For instance, typing mistakes, that for instance, some people can write yahoo.com and forget an O there, and that is a common mistake. Although this domain could exist, it usually is a result of a typing mistake, or instead people could type gmail instead of Gmail, and this is a situation that it would be interesting to detect as an invalid email address, because for instance, email addresses are used, for instance, in registration of sites, and if user enters an invalid address because of a typing mistake, then the user will be frustrated because he will not be able to complete his registration. And this component that takes this form of an invalid email address is very useful. And another form of it's not exactly a typing mistake, as some people sometimes are frustrated with the users that with sites that require registration, and they type some bogus domain, and which does not exist. So it was always be great to detect that as invalid email address. The same goes for temporary domains, like those domains that are associated with the IP address of the user machine, but it's a temporary domain like the noip.com and others like that. And another case is the disposal mailboxes that some users do not really want to register to some sites, because it's a bureaucratic process, and so they've supplied temporary email addresses created by sites that provide disposal mailboxes, which means that after they register, they will not be looking at those mailboxes, because they will just want to confirm their registration. But having sites accepting this type of invalid email addresses would be somehow could be somehow frustrating, because then the site would not be able to contact the user to send important messages, or if they are, for instance, sending newsletters, that they would be sending newsletters, wasting CPU and bandwidth resources for nothing, because the user would not be seeing those newsletters. So it would be better to not accept these disposable email addresses as valid. And then there are also a case that is not so common, but there are some addresses, some domains that were used to create what is called some spam traps. Spam traps are basically an idea to grab, to catch those spammers that harvest email addresses from web pages and are on other sites. So some people that decided to nail those spammers, they plant on sites some spam trap domains, spam trap email addresses that are attached to domains that if you try to send email to those addresses, it will go to some what they call a honeypot, which would cause the IP address of the server that is sending messages to those addresses to be blacklisted. The problem is that sometimes this type of spam traps are abused, and some users with malicious intentions supply them to real sites, and they, and for instance, for registrations, and when the sites send confirmation email addresses, I mean confirmation email messages, the that would cause innocent sites to be blacklisted. So it's also good to avoid as much as possible accepting email addresses that are served by spam trap domains and servers. And but this is something that is not very supported by blacklists because of that possible that potential of abuse. And another type of invalid address is those servers that are rejecting messages coming from certain sites or delivered to certain mailboxes because somehow the user decided to reject messages on that address, maybe specific to a certain origin site. And this is another type of invalid email address that it should also be avoided. And finally, there is a situation which is not really a permanently invalid email address, but may cause some temporary types of invalid addresses, which are mailboxes that are full of messages, and then at least until the user deletes some messages, they cannot accept any more email. So they may cause email messages to be refused at least for a while. And same goes for gray lists. Gray lists are an approach that is used by some servers that temporarily reject the first attempt to deliver a message, but that message will be accepted later if the server tries again. And this is basically to avoid getting messages from spammers that only try once to deliver the message, like most spam sending software. Anyway, these are the types of invalid email addresses that can be somehow detected by this class that I've developed. And not all types of invalid email addresses were supported. For instance, the types email addresses that result of typing mistakes, I have only implemented that feature recently. Basically, what I did, I looked at, for instance, all email addresses of users that registered on the PHP Classes site, but somehow did not confirm the registration. And I looked at those email addresses. I gathered, grouped them by the main. That's how I found many common typing mistakes that people make. So it's not a typing mistake that was done once, but it was done many times. And this class is capable of detecting some typing mistakes, obviously not all, because all the possible combinations of letters that could be typed wrongly would be like infinite, and it would not be possible. At least some frequently used typing mistakes that this class can detect it. And that was one type of invalid mail address that was supported recently in the latest versions. And basically, this article just tells how to use this class. The users do not need to understand completely all the possible scenarios of invalid email addresses. This article try to explain it, but they can simply skip that part of the article, and they can jump to the right to the actual section on which code is presented to demonstrate how to use the class. Well, whoever is interested on this this class, probably have a site that wants prevent that users enter invalid email addresses can use this class. The only thing that I would like to add is precisely about that feature of detecting email addresses that result from typing mistakes. And in that case, the class not only returns a success or failure code regarding the invalid email address, but also returns a suggestion to fix the email address that probably the user has entered. And if you want to see this in action, that you can, for instance, go on PitchBecause site and try to register and type one of those typo addresses and see that the site is suggesting to correct the email address. And it has proven to be very useful, although typing mistakes are not very, very frequent. They happen once in a while. And I think, I hope with this solution, this class can be useful to many people. Artus, did you use any type of email validation on sites that you have, probably taking registrations?
I usually don't use registration such as, but mostly third-party authentication, like Facebook, I don't know, or something.
Yeah.
But I told it on JS Classes podcast, and I want to repeat it here, that what you have gathered here is actually awesome, and you would have to make it a paid premium service and sell it to others, because, well...
Yeah.
It not only enhances the experience of correcting the typos, but also prevents spam registration and reduces the overload of mail server. So I think that this is really an awesome package.
Yeah, well, I did out of need. I really needed to avoid this problem. And This is actually something that I have considered to promote it as product, but I would need to have time to put it my development queue. But now that you emphasize that suggestion again, I will consider it in double. Maybe, who knows, I give it some priority, because it's not it's not something that is not that does not have such a great need. Also regarding to what you told me by the end of the article, I mentioned precisely what you said about authenticating users using accounts, probably some other site like Facebook or Google, Hotmail, and Twitter. And this is interesting because it is also a solution that also is possible to
let the other server handle all the registration and validation.
Yeah, exactly. It also provides a better user experience, because the users do not have to wait for the confirmation email address.
Yep.
For instance, in the PHPCast site, if you register, you can choose between Facebook, Google, Hotmail, actually Microsoft accounts, and also Yahoo, and Stack Overflow, and GitHub, because those are the most frequently used sites by developers, and this. Reduces the frustration of users that do not want to go through a bureaucratic registration process. And in the end, it's mostly two clicks, one click to confirm that you want to use certain servers, maybe Facebook, to authenticate, and on the second step, you just confirm that you authorize the site to access your account details, including the email address. And even Facebook not only can supply the email address with the permission of the user, of course, but also it can tell if the email address was already validated or not. So if you do not want to accept email addresses that were not validated, you can actually tell the user, oh, your email address was not validated, we will not accept it. I think Google also, Google and Microsoft OAuth and servers support it. So as I was mentioning, this is achieved with the OAuth protocol, and I also mentioned that I have another class that can be used for that purpose. But actually, that class is very, very popular, and if you, for people that did not know it already, they can just go on the link of the class that is mentioned on the article and talk more about it. Find more about it. And now moving on to our final sections. This podcast has been very interesting, but already quite long. So we are wrapping up with the final sections on which we comment about the Innovation Award nominees. We're going to start first for the Innovation Award nominees of the JS Plus site. Actually, from the nominees of January, they were voted in February, and then in March the results came out. And so there were two nominees in this month. Which one would you like to comment, Arthur?
Let me screen share first. Where was the screen sharer? Yep. Actually show. Dixon Santiesteban's class, the obfuscator tool that basically makes the compressed, minified JavaScript or any other language. I think that PHP was also supported. Makes it more readable, basically by splitting two more lines, like definitions, variables. Of course, it can't provide the meaningful names for the variables if they were stripped, but as you see, it becomes more readable, and so basically, yeah, it does what it said. It deobfuscates the code.
Right, that's great, and it's good to notice that not only it supports JavaScript but also PHP.
Yeah.
Although for PHP it's easier because PHP there's the tokenizing extension that can parse the code and does most of the complicated stuff, and then you can just need to write some code to rewrite. There are plenty of classes in JS classes that do that. And on my part, I'll like to comment the other class, which is Node Nmap. Basically, Nmap is a security tool to scan networks, finding computers, and check which ports are open on those computers. And the Node Nmap tool is basically a wrapper around this Nmap command that to actually use it to make it useful from JavaScript, actually Node.js-based JavaScript. So this is a very interesting package. Just to comment, this one is developed by Jason Griffin from the United States. So kudos for Jason. He has been a great contributor. I hope he can send more interesting packages. We can talk more about them in the future. And regarding the JS Classes Innovation Award, I would like to mention one thing that we'll be looking every month is about the country of the ranking of the Innovation Award winners. So every month the site computes a ranking. Not only by author, but also by country. So considering just 2014, we don't have many packages to talk about, but you can already see that by country you can see already the countries that are having more points accumulated, and this is interesting because we can start seeing which countries tend to be more productive. And as I mentioned before, the winner of the country that wins the innovation award of the year will earn a special prize. And so far, we don't have. We are just considering just 1 month, so we don't. We cannot see yet a trend of which country will win. But I think from the outlook of this ranking, you can see which are the countries that tend to send more packages, and I mean innovative packages, because not all packages are nominated. So that was for jazz classes. Now we are going to move on to the nominees of the PHP Innovation Award of January. Artus, which ones would you like to comment?
Okay, let me comment on. Let me screen share again. So basically, first one I would want to emphasize is a class of Roger Backlund from Norway. And what it does, it's actually I love kind of this stuff that word parsing and processing. And what it does, it actually tries to determine if a word is a real word, not a made-up word, based on vowels and consonants. Hence the name Vocon. And it goes through the list of the words, assigns some kind of score on how possibly this word would be real or not. As we see, the threshold is 3.5, and so if it the threshold is higher, then probably it's not a real word. Thus, yeah, it actually it's quite interesting. And yeah,
this package was also used by another package that was also nominated. This one is just to detect the probability of the package. A word not be real, and the other package uses it to detect eventual spam, considering that as a factor. So it was quite interesting.
Okay, and I wanted to mention another class. Basically, what it does, let me show you. It's a class of Zea George or something like that. It's probably he's from Greece, and what he does an interesting thing. As I'm lately more into Lua developing, there is a thing as meta methods. So when you access some kind of properties, there you could define a callbacks, and that allows to implement lots of kind of interesting stuff, like bridges between languages or bindings. And this class does exactly the same thing in PHP. I actually was thinking recently, I wanted to port some kind of library from Lua to PHP or JavaScript to use it in a web-based environment. And I was thinking, will it be possible to do such thing? And basically, yeah, thanks to the author, it would be possible to define some kind of callbacks that would be called when you change some values of the properties of the object. So yeah, that's nice class, and thanks to the author.
Yeah, that's good. Always good to have classes that somehow go further beyond what the language can do.
Yeah.
And on my part, I'll also like to comment a couple of classes. Unfortunately, we don't have time to comment on all the six nominees, so we just comment about four. And one of the ones that I would like to comment is this one, MySQL Hot Backup by Orazio Principe from Italy. Yeah, well, basically what this class does is that it allows to take backups of the whole database or even just a set of tables and do it while the application is still running. You do not need to stop it. So it provides a solution that incrementally copies the records of the tables that were modified since the last backup. So if you do an initial backup, it probably will take longer, but subsequent backups will take less time because you only copy the records that were changed. This is an interesting approach. We have seen more solutions that somehow emulate the MySQL dump command that comes with the MySQL distribution, and that is a sort of rough type of backup. Not only it takes more time, but it may even have problems of missing data during the changes, or it requires the database tables to be locked, which is not a good thing. So kudos to Horatio for his solution. It's really, really interesting. The other solution that I wanted to comment on, I mean, the other nominated package, it's one that does something that's interesting, which is analyzing the characters of a text file. Could be a text string, and detect if the type of encoding. It could be, for instance, UTF-16 or UTF-32. It looks at the patterns of the bytes that appear there and returns a result for all the possible encodings. Or if it is some other encoding, it just returns false, telling that it cannot be sure what would be the encoding. So it's interesting, this package from Marcelo Intrigas from Argentina. And also now, also mentioning the rankings of the Innovation Award, also for the PHP classes. In this case, we have more nominated packages, and the competition seems to be stronger here. In this case, we have Italy is in the front because it have already three nominated packages, and in this case were from two authors. This is already showing that together multiple authors of a country may win, may help their country win, even if they do not win individual. So we are still very early in the championship of the year in terms of individual authors or countries, but we'll be keeping up with these rankings every month to see how the evolution goes. Well, with this, basically, we have ended this podcast. We talked a lot about several very interesting topics, so it took quite a long time to do it. It only remains to thank you, Arthur, for coming and filling in for Cesar.
Sure.
It is always great to have you. And, on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.